and welcome to Radio Out There. I'm Barry Eaton. Do you often think about your ancestors and the part that they've played in your life? Well, this week we're going to really go into that whole area. My guest is Linda Yael Schiller, who is a mind-body-spirit psychotherapist, author, and international teacher. And we're going to be talking about her book, Ancestral Dreaming. Linda, hi, and welcome to Radio Out There.
Hi, Barry. Nice to be here with you.
Now, you are over in Massachusetts, am I right?
That's right, just outside Boston, Massachusetts.
Just Boston. Okay, fine. And I'm in Sydney, Australia. So there we are. We're the other side of the world. But right. We can have a link. And you have written in a wonderful book called Ancestral Dreaming and How We Are Connected to Our Ancestors. Now, I think most of us realize there is a connection there. But what influenced you to do the whole thing about ancestral dreaming, and why dreaming?
Well, I was a psychotherapist, and I've been practicing for over 40 years, and a consultant, and I taught at Boston University School of Social Work. I've been doing dream work for a really long time, for over 40 years. And this is actually my third book. Mm-hmm. So the first one was called Modern Dream Work, and sort of a general sort of psycho-spiritual approach to dream work. The second book is called PTS Dreams, Healing Nightmares from Trauma Through Dreamwork. And how that brought me to ancestral dreaming is the story I'll tell you.
Sure.
So I'm a member of an organization called IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams. It's a big shout out for IASD. It's a wonderful organization, and it's international. There are some Australian members, by the way, who I have met. Yeah, Melissa Johnson. I don't know if you know her.
But anyway, no, it's a big place.
but she's also a podcaster. That's why maybe you'd cross paths. But anyway, a gentleman from America named Jose, is a member of the organization, contacted me several years ago from the Ukraine. He was an American aid volunteer who had gone over to help the Ukrainian citizens during this time of war. He had come across my book, PTS Dreams, and was using it to help the Ukrainians deal with their nightmares from war trauma. So it was a really interesting connection because, as I was telling a little bit before we started recording, my grandfather was actually born in Kyiv. Mm-hmm. And in about 1903, his parents and he had to flee what was either Russia or the Ukraine then because of pogroms, and they had to leave for their lives. And they went over to England and then came over to America. No. So it was an incredible synchronistic full circle for me that this man who I never knew was in the Ukraine helping the Ukrainians heal from nightmares in the place that my ancestors were not only born, but actually had to flee from. And it just felt like this sort of full circle of a healing loop. And I was really honored to be sort of a part of this loop of intergenerational and inter-global healing. So that was part one. And then the second part is after Jose and I had been connected for a while, I had a dream. And that got me started on writing this book. So the dream I had was that I am learning how to make borscht, which is an Eastern European peasant beet soup. Yeah. And there's someone who's teaching me how, a teacher, a chef. And I have some students who haven't quite been able to get the hang of it. This is all in the dream. The chef says, well, that's because you need a shredder. And you need a shredder in order to make the soup. So he brings a shredder. We grind up the beets and whatever else goes in, make yummy beet soup. And then I go back to my students and say, okay, we have to start over because we didn't have the shredder. And they kind of complain. They don't want to start over again. I said, no, but now we have the right equipment, the right tools in order to make this good beet soup. That's the dream.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So as I worked with this dream, I was, you know, you think about when you're doing dream work, what are your associations? And every dream, of course, has multiple simultaneous layers of meaning. It's not just one meaning, but it could be many things, not only this or that, but this and that. So I'm thinking about borscht and beet soup, and I'm thinking, oh, borscht, it's a Ukrainian peasant soup. My grandfather was born in the Ukraine. And I'm thinking, oh, well, what a coincidence, or more likely a synchronicity, that I'd have this dream right when I find out that my book is being used to help Ukrainians. And then the story I told you about my grandfather. So then I go back, and in the dream, you ask, what is an X, right? So the gift of dream work is the gift of associations. So I said, all right, what's a beet? So a beet is red. It grows in the ground. It's a root vegetable. And I'm getting a root. Mm-hmm. It has to do with my roots, making borscht.
Makes sense, yeah.
A root vegetable. So it has to do with my roots. So I have an aha there. And beets are red, and blood is red. So it also has to do with blood at multiple layers of meaning. So my bloodline is one layer of meaning. And then the centuries, really, of war and blood that has been shed in that part of the world. So here's part of what's going into this soup. And then the other strange phenomenon in the dream was this thing called a shredder. Now, that's kind of an unusual word. So when we do dream work, we pay attention to something odd or unusual. So first I say, all right, a shredder. Well, that's it's kind of like a food processor, and it kind of grinds things up, grinds your food up, and it makes it more digestible and more accessible to eat because you've got a great big beet. You can't really eat it. It has to be sort of pureed or cut up small. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, a shredder makes something palatable and digestible and therefore potentially nutritious. And on the other hand, the word shred means to rip apart or tear apart. And if anyone who's a listener has ever had an experience of sort of being hurt in their love life, sometimes the words we use is, oh, I feel shredded. My heart was shredded by that relationship. So I'm thinking, okay, so we've got a couple layers of meaning with the shredder. On one hand, it's being torn apart, and that's true both about what's happening in the Ukraine and what happened to my grandfather. Mm. And when we metabolize something and digest it, then we can work with it and it becomes something that can feed us.
Right.
I go back to my students and say, okay, here's what we have to do. We have to learn how to do this right so we can be fed by it and not just shredded. Mm. So that's the story of how I started writing. And that gave me the seed, if you will, for thinking about writing this book, Ancestral Dreaming.
Okay. Well, fair enough. You say that the purpose of the book is to help people connect with their ancestors in order, quote, to heal any intergenerational wounds you may have inherited. So connecting with our ancestors is just the start. So how do we do that? You talk about how to do it. So let's have a little quick chat about that, because I mean, I have my ancestors coming to me all the time. My grandfather, my great-grandfather, my father came through recently with some wonderful advice to help me. 3 days later, I was in hospital, and he said, beforehand, I'll be there to help you. I didn't know I was going to hospital. So they are there, they are around us. But how do we, I mean, I have, as I mentioned before, I'm a medium, but how do people who are not mediums connect by themselves without without sort of doubting that they are in touch with their ancestors?
Yeah. So you have like about 3 or 4 questions embedded in there. So
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's perfectly fine. I can hold them all.
Yeah,
I don't do that. It's good. There's many layers to the story too.
And yeah, well, there are. Yeah.
So when we are connecting with or visited by our ancestors, it's not only about somebody needs to be healed, right? That's part of why I wrote the book and about this. And we'll talk about intergenerational healing and epigenetics in a minute.
But
just the connecting part. So what I did in the book is I delineated 6 ways or reasons, if you will, why our ancestors might be looking to connect with us.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is simply to say, we're still here. We're not gone. We're just not embodied anymore, but we're still with you. So that's one layer. The second is from over here, wherever over here is, I have a gift or a blessing for you, or I'm here to say sorry to about something we weren't able to resolve in life, some kind of a healing message from our ancestors. That's two. Three, and it sounds like this is the one of the ones that your dad came through with, is I have some advice for you, or I'm here to help you, or you have some kind of a dilemma or a question or an issue or a health issue, and I'm here with information and knowledge and advice to help you. So those are the first three. Mm-hmm. The next one gets into the intergenerational healing. Four is when our ancestors died in their own pain, when they died with unresolved wounds, with unresolved trauma, with unresolved hurt, often they can kind of get stuck between worlds, like in the bardo, and they can't quite go all the way over because they're not done with the healing they needed to do while they were embodied. And sometimes they don't even realize they're not still embodied because they're so stuck in the pain and the trauma. So then this message that comes through from our ancestors is, please help me. I'm still hurting and I need you to help me get over and heal from these wounds and these traumas. And we'll talk about how some ways to do that in a minute. The fifth layer is when those departed ancestors died holding a grudge and they want you to carry it on. There was some kind of a split or a cutoff or a fight or an argument in the family, who knows how far back, and they haven't let go of it yet. And they want you to perpetuate it. So we think about like the famous grudge holders, like the Capulets and the Montagues. And here in the United States, in the Civil War, Hatfields and the McCoys is a famous, American grudge holding families. Yeah. So we have a special method for dealing with those guys. And then the sixth message is, it's connected really for the first one. If the first one is, I'm still here. The last one is, remember me. Tell your children, tell your grandchildren, tell your students, tell your mentees if appropriate, and make my life something that continues and is remembered and passed on from generation to generation. And there's a lot of different ways that we can do that.
Well, there are, and several of them are covered by mediums because as a medium myself, and I go to a spiritual church, we have people come through with messages all the time. So that is one lovely way of doing it. I'll recommend that one. But how do people know that they are getting a message from an ancestor? Because, I mean, there are so many people who might be adopted or don't know their ancestors, don't know their family background. How do they know that a message is not only genuine, but affecting them?
Right. So where my focus is, and we'll go outside of that as well, is when we get a message through a dream. And many of our ancestors choose to visit while we're sleeping and while we're dreaming, because I think the veil between worlds is thinner then. And it's easier for them to come through, and it's easier for us to notice. Sometimes they just come through spontaneously, as you were talking about in mediumship. And sometimes they might need to be invited if we want to connect with them for a certain reason. But
is it conscious or subconscious invitation?
Both. Either or both. So we can consciously invite someone. If you'd like to, I'll tell a story actually from the book. One of my one of the people in my dream circle, her dad had died about 6-8 months ago, and she was really wanting a sign from him that he was okay, that he was, had gone over, that he was at peace. And she kept saying, I haven't had a sign yet. I haven't had a dream yet. He hasn't come to me in a dream, because this is a dream circle. So we work on the dreams every week when we get together. And then one day, after about 6 months after he had died, she comes into dream group and she said, that's it. I have to tell you I had a sign. So she said, I'm driving down the street and I look up and I see a street sign that says Charles Street. My father's name is Charles. So she said, I knew that was him because I asked for a sign. And he literally gave me a street sign, and I recognized his sense of humor. And then she was at peace because she could recognize that that was legitimate. So how do we know whether it's a waking sign like that, with, in this case, a sense of humor, or something that comes through in our dreaming self, or what we call dream adjacent states, like that just before you're falling asleep, that hypnopompic zone or the hypnagogic zone, or in synchronicities or deja vus or things like that? Well, when it's sort of random and isn't someone in our connected world, we're pretty clear that it's a symbol or a metaphor. Like, you might have a dream about a man who looks like your dad, but you know it's not your dad. Or you might have a dream about someone who doesn't look like your dad, but in the dream, you know this man is supposed to be your dad. So that's a regular dream with dream characters, and we have to figure out who that person is and what's their symbolism and what are they doing. Contrasting that to visitation. In a visitation, whether we're awake or asleep, we have a felt sense of their presence. We feel it in our body, right? There's a frisson, there's a tingle, there's some kind of aha. And people describe these ahas through any of the senses, that they hear the sound and timbre of their voice, or they feel the touch of their hand on their face. One of my clients said when her cat had died and he would come back and visit her, she'd feel him sitting on her chest purring, and she could feel his purr, and she knew it was a real visit and not just a dream cat.
Not just a dream. Yeah.
This embodied sense of presence helps us tell the difference between an actual visitation and something that's a symbol or metaphor.
Yeah, I've had that experience myself. Quite amazing. In the middle of the night, a hand striking mine. Fantastic. Okay, let's take a short break and listen to a song that is very appropriate.
To stone if I ask you to share a problem that
Diana Ross, Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. Lovely song. Haven't heard that for ages. Also, did you listen to the lyrics? You're listening to Radio Out There. Radio Out There. Food for the mind, the body, and the soul. Linda, this brings into question for me anyway, the thought that what about our spirit guides? Are they involved in this? Are they helping connect? Are they planting things in our mind? Are they working with our departed friends, lovers, whatever, to be able to help us to help ourselves? I believe we just don't ask for help. We have to find out how to help ourselves.
Right. It's really interesting because there are some people that find it really easy to ask for help. That's probably not most people, right? Yeah, it's probably not most adults, for sure, that they, oh, I'll do it myself, or I'm independent, or I'm an adult now. I don't need your help. Thank you very much. So we have to get over that in a way to know when it is right for us to ask for help from whoever, whether they're embodied or in spirit. And could our spirit guides, whether they're human spirit guides or angelic or animals or whoever or whatever they are they helping us connect with ancestors? Sure. Do I know that for sure? No, but I can imagine that that could be true, right? I don't see why not.
No.
If they're our spirit guides and have our best interest at heart.
That's true. That's true. Also, in my own research for my own books and that, I know that we have, when we go to bed, we also, the spirit leaves the body. It's not there all the time. The body needs rest. The spirit doesn't. So the spirit leaves the body and maybe an out-of-body experience, but also connects with other people.
Also what? I'm sorry?
Also connects with people on the other side, the soul, the spirit, okay? And and that can also be a time of working with relatives or ancestors. So there are so many different ways we can connect. But what about the subconscious? Surely there must be an aspect of subconscious asking for help or needing help.
Sure. There are, just as there are multiple simultaneously true layers in a dream that we can look at, that this is true and this and this, there are multiple ways of connecting with our resources, with people, spirits, guides who can help us, whether they're embodied, whether they're not embodied, whether it's our cat or our dog. So, and what you were describing is that there are many spiritual traditions that say that when we are asleep at night, there are layers of the soul. And this is from Kabbalah, actually, the nefesh layer of the soul stays in our body. But the other layers go up in that thin silver thread and go traveling to other worlds and other realms to connect and learn and bring back messages. And then before we wake up, they return to our body, which is why, as you probably know, we're advised never to wake up a sleeper too suddenly, because we don't want to inadvertently cut the thread before the rest of their spirit returns into the body.
That is very true. Now, the other thing I wanted to have a chat to you about, and there's so much to talk about in your book, but I wanted to talk about the bones, because I found this fascinating. And you say bones are not only a solid scaffolding of the body, they contain the living, growing tissue that produces marrow, the essence of human life. So our bones are so important. I thought, at the time, I don't necessarily believe that. Then I went away and thought, because my own research says that we are a spirit using a body as a vehicle for life. So once that vehicle goes, off it goes, like an old car. But there's a lot more to it than that, isn't there? You got me thinking about that.
Oh, that's great. That's the nicest thing anyone can say. That's something that we've written, right? Gets them thinking about some things.
Yeah.
So in my research for doing this, I discovered that not only do our bones are the scaffolding, the skeleton, literally the rest of us is either hung on or contained inside. And then inside the bones is the marrow, which is where all of our life-giving red blood cells are produced. And we actually can give life to someone if we share our bone marrow with them, which is kind of mind-blowing if you think about it.
Yeah.
And why can we do that? Because in our bone marrow is where we have the stem cells. And the stem cells are the building blocks of life. Uh-huh. And so this is a very cool thing, connecting with ancestors, that I learned as I researched, that when a woman is conceived and she's a fetus, every egg that her ovaries will ever contain is already there in her body before she's born.
Before she's born.
Before she's born, while she's in the womb.
Utero.
And so what that means is she's still in utero. She's got all the eggs she'll ever have. So what that means is when her mother was in utero, her mother contained all the eggs she'll ever had. Mm. So we're actually there inside of our grandmother before our parents or ourselves or our children were born.
Interesting.
It's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
I know, I hadn't either until I saw this research.
Mm. So what about the choice of bodies? Because I've contacted people on the other side and whatever. Sometimes we choose our body. Other times we are told this is set up for you by the Council of Elders or whatever on the other side. So it's not just a flat answer, is it? It's such a complicated area.
Right. Given that none of us are divine and know everything, we don't know the answer as to how this happened. But I want to go back to two things you said, and one was about the bones. In many, many traditions and cultures, bones are revered, respected, hallowed. It's not by coincidence that we have graves and we visit the grave site and we put flowers on a grave or we put a stone on the grave, or we have Day of the Dead in Mexico where we go and have a picnic with our ancestors on their grave site. So it's not by coincidence that when the body has been buried long enough, all that's left are the bones. Mm. And in Hawaii, for example, the bones contain what they call the mana, which is the essence of life. So they're very, very holy and contain life essence after the body has died. And in some Christian traditions, the bones of saints, right, are reliquies. And there's a belief that the essence or spirit of the saint is in that, like, finger bone or whatever. And if you come into contact with it, you have a potential of healing.
Right.
There's a lot of spiritual story about the power of bones.
Yeah. But that brings into question cremation. Mm-hmm. How does that impact the whole situation?
So my personal theory is that when someone is cremated, right, what's left after the pyre or the cremation itself is ash. Mm. And what's the ash contained from? It's the bones.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the bones. Still it reminds me, actually, and I just thought of it this minute, it's like the shredder. It's still the bones, but it's the bones broken down into their finest particles of this ash.
Right. Interesting. So how far back does the bone situation go with ancestors? Because obviously we have past lives. I've written about it. I'm sure you as a mind-body-spirit person will understand past lives and accept the fact that we are here on many, 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 many occasions. What about the ancestors from other lives that may still have a karmic influence on us, even though we may have nothing to do with them in our current life?
So the word ancestors is a very rich, full word, and it is generally used sort of generically to speak about people who we have a blood relationship with. But that's only one meaning of the word ancestor. You mentioned before, and I've written about this, like what about in the case of adoption, for example?
Mm-hmm.
My daughter was born in China. And so she has two sets of ancestors. She has her birth parents from whoever she was born to in China before we adopted her. And she has our whole family. And she is very, very clear that we are her family and her ancestors, just as much, if not more so, actually, than whoever her Chinese birth parents were. Because we live in an environment and we live in a family culture and we take in things from our family that become part of us. And this is an epigenetic sense as opposed to a literal bone marrow sense.
Yeah, right.
Do find there are changes in the genes based on environment that we've lived in. And we'll get back to that when we talk about trauma as well.
Well, I don't know whether we'll have time in this episode.
Oh, maybe we'll save that for another time.
I think, just to answer
your question about the unrelated ancestors and karmic connections, I think absolutely that sometimes we have soul mates, not just beloveds,
but soul twins
or soul family that has nothing to do, right, with our blood family. And sometimes that soul family comes through in karmic connections and has something to tell us or want up from us or any of those layers of connection. And then in addition, Gaia, Mother Earth, right, is our biggest ancestor. And the land we walk on is our ancestors. And I know in Australia, there's a large culture around the song lines and the Aboriginal walking on the land. And many, many Indigenous cultures talk about this. And so our ancestors can be the land we're living on now, or the land our ancestors lived on, or the land our karmic ancestors lived on. So that land piece can be an ancestor as well.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned karma there, because that was something I wanted to raise with you. How much is karma involved in all of this? Because I'm also an astrologer, and I can look at somebody's chart and see where the karma is, or some of it, I don't know all of it, but some of it. So what do you think about that?
I think, again, this is me talking, not a scientific answer, but that I think our soul gifts, our soul blessings, and our soul debts, as well as our soul wounds, can be carried on from generation to generation and carried on not only through a family system, if we have past lives that are not our families, but that we were embodied in another family system in a past life, that need to be completed, healed, finished. I don't know what the right word is exactly, but there's like a cycle, right?
Sure.
So we have to, some way, shape, or form, we have to finish a cycle. And we all know some people we say are old souls, and maybe they're on their last cycle because they've done a lot of work already. Mm. And then there are people who are new souls, and they got a lot of stuff, and they have many more lifetimes that they'll go through before they finish whatever they're put on earth to do.
Yeah, hundreds of them, probably.
Yeah. Because I think we all are here for a reason, right? We all have some meaning and purpose. And then the question is, do we figure out what it is? Did we get the whole story? Is it being passed on from generation to generation? And how do we know when we're done?
Yeah. Well, I think we know when we're done when we go back to the afterlife after our incarnation, and we have a meeting with our guides and with our elders on the other side, and we are having a little, it's like the after of a sporting event, all sit down and analyze a game. And I think that's what happened.
Monday morning quarterbacking.
That's right. Well, football, whether it's football, tennis, golf, badminton or whatever, doesn't matter. If we've won, if we've lost, if we've made mistakes, then we actually go back and analyze that so we know where we are. Because, I also believe and have research that we have an agreement every lifetime to come in and address certain karmic issues. Now, that, when you intertwine it with your ancestors, it's an amazingly complex kind of situation.
So what it means is that as best as we can, I think we're listening for who's coming through in our waking states or our sleeping states. Who is it? And what are they saying? What are they giving us? What are they asking of us? And how is what they're telling us or asking us, how does that line up with what we understand as our soul purpose or our soul mission?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough, fair enough. Now, you mentioned earlier, I wanted to probably wrap up with this one, our chat at the moment, because there's so much to talk about your book. It's a wonderful ancestral dreaming, everybody. Go out and buy a copy. That's all right. As a fellow author, we have to let people
Absolutely.
Know. Right. Epigenetics. Now, that informs us, as you say in the book, events from generations past can still affect us for generations to come.
That's right.
So let's talk about that.
So we are semi-permeable beings. What happens to us and in our environment affects us physically, emotionally, spiritually, cognitively. And it gets embodied in our marrow, in our blood cells, in our system. Our neurochemistry changes when we're in danger, when we're in a traumatic situation. Our fight, flight, or freeze response kicks in, the self-protective mechanisms, and we act in ways to try as best as we can to ensure that we'll literally survive. Because when we're in danger, the main message is survive. So the fact that you and I are here today, and that anyone who's listening is here today, means we've survived and our ancestors have survived, or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But our ancestors then, I was just talking to a gentleman the other day whose father served in the Pacific in World War II and had a lot of PTSD. And he told us how his father parented all of the kids. He was one of five kids. And that my father was very strict and everything was right or wrong. And you had to be ship shape fast. Don't stop if someone gave you an order, you had to do it right away. Well, that was the difference between life and death for him in the foxhole. And that's how he parented his children. And then that's how the children parented their children. There was always a sense that at any minute we could die.
Oh, yeah.
So until we become aware and conscious of what we're carrying from generations past, we think it's ours and we think it's real. And we walk through life thinking, at any minute I could die. That becomes our belief system. And we know that our physical and emotional bodies respond to our cognitive thoughts and beliefs. And so we live our lives on edge all the time, looking over our shoulder all the time. Until we become aware that we're actually carrying something from a previous generation that isn't necessarily true for us anymore. Mm. It happened to someone in our history, but it's not happening now. Mm. So then we have two tasks. One is to go back in time through a variety of different ways of working with dream work and in working in waking life to the ancestors to whom the trauma happened and bring them healing so they can heal and finish their journey. Mm. And then with that healing, we get to move forward in life to bring the healing rather than the wound or the trauma to ourselves and pass along the healing and the resilience and the hope to our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah. Well, this opens up a truckload of emotions, doesn't it? Across the board, I mean, for all of us.
Yeah. It's very powerful work, and which is also why one of the things I suggest in the book is before you purposefully connect with your ancestors or go reaching out for them, whatever you do or don't know about your family system, mm-hmm. make sure that you have drawn in your own protection. Right?
Yes.
I talk about this circle of blue light, this sapphire light, the egg of light that comes from an ancient Kabbalistic tradition. But many, many cultures tune into the color of blue as a healing color. So purposefully, before you go to sleep at night or before you do work with your ancestors, allow yourself to draw in through your crown chakra at the top of your head and draw in that divine light. Fill yourself with it and surround yourself with it, with that of light, so that you are boundaried and protected so that any adverse situations that happened in the past to our ancestors doesn't become part of us then.
Part of us, yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
I think this goes further. You can use that wonderful cocoon almost of protection in many areas when you're in danger, when you're many, many different situations in life. Now, just to wrap up, You have some wonderful exercises throughout the book. So it's not a matter of just going out and saying, help, ancestors, where are you? I need you. You are there showing how it can be done. And that's very, very important, isn't it?
Right. So just for an example, as we talked about before, one of the easiest ways to connect is when we're asleep in the dream world. So before you go to sleep at night, first of all, make sure you have a dream journal next to your bed so you can write and record whatever comes through in the night, because dreams are very ephemeral, like wisps of smoke. You sit up too fast and they're gone, right? So you have to record it.
Yeah.
And then you can do a practice called dream incubation, which simply means you do a little bit of journaling, a little writing before you go to sleep, asking the question that you want to ask, looking for the information or the healing that you want. Mm. And you could spend a few minutes or half an hour, whatever feels right to you, but end your journaling time with as clear a question as you can and ask specifically for a dream to come through that gives you wisdom and advice in regards to the question you're asking. Mm-hmm. So it's very sort of specific. You're asking for this help or this healing, and that try to hold your question in your mind as the last thing you think about before you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And before you do that, again, you'll bring your circle of blue light around you to keep you safe and protected.
Mm-hmm.
And then you honor the messages that came through by writing them down.
Yeah.
And then, right, then you have to work with the dream and you have to work with the images and the people that came through to figure out who was it, why are they here, what do they want from you, what do they want you to get from them. And I often recommend, if you can, do that with somebody else. I mean, start doing it with yourself, of course, but then take the dream to your partner or to your friend or to your dream circle, because getting to all the knowledge or all the information, it's like trying to see the back of your own head without a mirror. Even Carl Jung said, I have to talk with my colleagues before I really know what a dream means. So that helps in unpacking how do we understand who and what this is.
Wonderful. I'm glad you mentioned Jung, because he also falls in line with both our beliefs there. There is no such thing as coincidence. It's all synchronicity.
Yeah.
I love that.
Right, right. And for anyone who might not be familiar with synchronicity, the way it's been translated is meaningful.
Mm.
Not random, but meaningful.
Meaningful. Yeah, very true. Very true. I think there's a purpose in everything that happens. It's just sometimes finding it. Linda, it's a wonderful book, Ancestral Dreaming. And as I said before, there's so much we could talk about. I could keep on talking here for another hour, but we're running out of time. So thank you so much. And I look forward to having another chat with you at some stage in the near future.
Oh, that would be lovely. When you get a chance, right, this is a book to be read slowly and digested. If you want to find the book, it's you can go to Llewellyn's website. You can find it on Amazon or any of the places you would buy your books. My website, if you want to know a little about me, is Linda Yael Schiller. That's LindaYaelSchiller.com. So you can learn more about me and the books.
As I popped into as I looked at my emails this morning, or in my computer, I say, there were a list of bookshops all around that have your book. So it's everywhere. If nothing else, just say Ancestral Dreaming. But also, you consult with people too, don't you? So if people want to get in touch with you, that is the best way.
Right. Through my website, there's a button, for contact. So they can
reach me. Linda, lovely to meet you. Thank you so much. Really enjoyable.
My pleasure. Nice to spend this time with you, Barry.
And we now know just what an important part our ancestors play in our lives. Fascinating chat, Linda Yael Schiller and her book Ancestral Dreaming. And just a reminder, Linda will be in New Zealand March 6th and right through to March 8th next year. Thank you for your company. I'm going off now to have a little chat to my grandfather. I do it all the time. All right, see you next time. Bye.